Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight on this Monday the 25th show. And this is going to be scan number 2971. SCAN, it stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. Before I introduce our guest tonight, who is going to be just perfect for the show, because that's what we are about here. We're about education. We're about offering hope and healing. And anything that we can ever do here to prevent, okay, any type of child abuse. Tonight, we're going to focus on some issues involving human trafficking, which always steps in when it comes down to abuse. You know there's going to be child sex abuse. You know there's going to be trauma. You know there's going to be different platforms that we need to actually introduce here, for NASCO. And so our guest tonight is it's John DiGirolamo. I guess I hope I say that right. And he is from Buena Vista, Colorado, and he has a new book out. Okay, we're going to talk about all of this, but the name of the book, it's not about sex, okay? So it features true stories of human trafficking, okay? So before I read more about John's bio, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about NASCA and how you can call into the show tonight if you want to call in and have some questions and comments. That number is a dedicated number all the time, and it's area code 646-595-2118, okay? And if you want to listen to the show also, if you want to call in that number and you just want to be a listener, I do have another host here. Her name is Kim Lakin. I know Kim's listening. Thank you, Kim, for being here. And you know, she'll just simply put on there that you're just listening. That number is 646-595-2118. You can also go in to the website, okay, which is www.NASCA.org. And right on the front page, as soon as you look at it, you're going to see a microphone that says Blog Talk Radio. Just click on it, and then you can just file a little prompt that comes up, and you can listen to the show all night long, you know, and all of our shows, by the way, because that SCAN number that I introduced to you earlier is always available, so you can punch in that number and it'll come up on that particular show. And if you have a question about it or anything like that, you can always reach me or our President Bill or Vice President Carol, and you can reach us on the contact list, which is also on that front page of the NASCA website. So I do want to tell you a little bit about NASCA. And we do have a mission statement here at NASCA, okay? So NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we do have a single purpose here at NASCA. So basically, we also introduce things like child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? So with these single purposes that we have, it's to address these issues, okay, and related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, Okay, so we do this with only two goals. And the first one is really what this show is about. It's about educating the public, okay? So especially relating to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sex abuse, or CSA, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, a worldwide problem that affects everyone. And we know how extensive human trafficking is here. I think that we can throw some stats around later on the show, because we're going to have a lot to talk about. But I know that the U.S. is leading that category in the hundreds of thousands per year, okay? So I hope we can discuss more about this later. You know, now the second goal is offering hope and heal, okay? So we do this through numerous paths here. And that's providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information, okay? That's the key, information to anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So before I bring on John, I'm going to tell you one more thing, is that in our website, okay, we have several areas that in the red tabs on the front page, that if you need to know anything about NASCA whatsoever, we have programs there. We have news, articles, and stats. Let's see, we have all about recovery. And we also have a great area, which I'm always in, between all about recovery and protecting our kids, okay? That, to me, is who I am. And, you know, from talking to John just briefly, I know that what he's about, and I think that everyone who does any type of work in this industry, that they're about that also. And also, you can participate at NASCA, okay? So there's a lot of ways to do that, and you can always get in touch with me or Bill or Carol or any one of us here at NASCA if you ever want to do that. So I do want to tell a little bit more about John, his bio, and I did say, you know, that he has a new book out. I know he's an author of another book, and I'm not sure about the rest. We'll talk about this because it's his night, okay? So he's going to shed light on all of this great stuff. And his new book is called It's Not About the Sex, okay? And it features two stories of human trafficking. So the ordinary citizen will become more aware about how this problem occurs under the radar in our society. And John is a critically acclaimed author, speaker, and anti-human trafficking advocate. He wrote this book because he believes that human trafficking is one of the most underreported issues of our day. Isn't that the truth? No question about it. And we want to talk a lot about that part. That cuts across all economic, social, racial, and political boundaries. He focuses on stories from rural and suburban America seeking to shine a light on and create awareness of the evils of human trafficking, okay? So I'm going to stop right there. There's more to the bio. You know, I mean, he's an advocate, and there's a lot of things there. But already, you know, just in that little bit, you know, we're going to just really talk about so much stuff. And I do want to let everybody know that you know, this is John's night, and we want to thank him so much for being here. Because any time that we can bring someone in that's an author and someone that has extensive, you know, expertise on everything here that we stand for, we just can't wait to hear his story. So without any more further ado, I do want to bring in John and introduce him to the show. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Great, man. So you're from Buena Vista, Colorado, is that correct?
Yes, I've lived in Colorado for about 16 years and moved up to the mountains, and that's where I've been doing my writing.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, actually Kim, who's the co-host, she's from there too, by the way. Not from Buena Vista, she's from Colorado. And also have a first cousin that lives there, you know, and I've never been to Colorado. I was a baseball player and traveled quite a bit, but I never got a chance to actually go to Colorado. So hoping one of these days that I get a chance to do that, you know. So I do want to thank you, man, for being here tonight, and really can't wait to hear your story. You know, everything that you want to say or been wanting to say on a national scale, it's very important to the public, you know. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself maybe in the beginning, maybe a little bit about your childhood and how you grew up maybe, and then eventually, you know, what got you into the human trafficking side of things?
Sure. So, you know, I don't always admit it, but I did grow up in New Jersey. I moved around a lot. Also, I don't like to admit I'm an accountant by professional trade, because people think that, you know, if you're a numbers guy, you don't know how to write. So I'll admit all my faults up front, but
I get that.
You know, I moved around a lot as a kid. Yeah, and you know, just had a fairly standard childhood. You know, it's a lot different back in the 60s and 70s and early 80s as a kid growing up compared to what kids have to deal with today. It's really a completely different world. You know, I went to college, got a degree in accounting, you know, had a nice career, and was always interested in writing. And, you know, long, long time ago, I thought I was going to be the next John Grisham, and thought that maybe that would be a great career. And then quickly realized I better use that accounting degree and you know, get a real job. And so that's what I did, and, you know, kind of had, I would say, a fairly standard career, and lived out in California for a while, and decided to kind of get out of the rat race a little bit and move to Colorado. And then last year I completed my first book.
That's awesome. I did see that you had your first book, and I do want to talk a little bit about that if we can, because I know we had talked, you know, just for a minute before the show, and really just by some of the things you were telling me, I'm so interested in that too, because I think that some of the people, and you don't have to mention any names or anything like that, you can say whatever you want to in this show. But the way that you were telling me about it, I was like, I was all into it immediately. You know, so the previous book and the first book is called It's Not About the Badge, right? So it basically profiles the human side of policing and featuring rural officers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to tell stories, right, you know, from the officers, and I would ask them a question such as, tell me about a day on the job that you'll never forget. And I got all kinds of really interesting answers. And I thought, you know, if I talk to small town, middle America, you know, mostly Colorado police officers, I would get a lot of the same answers. And I really didn't. I got all kinds of really interesting stories. And what I wanted to focus on that book was, why was this particular day extraordinary for you as a police officer, even though maybe it's not a extraordinary, you know, crime or something like that? You know, these are men and women out on patrol, you know, dealing with the public on an everyday basis. It isn't the detective trying to save the New York City subway from being blown up by the terrorists type of thing. These are just regular middle America police officers, and you never really heard their stories.
I do see, like you said middle America Americans. So some of these stories are from like small town police officers. Is that correct?
Yes. There are pretty much small town rural police officers, and you know, a lot of times the media, if they portrayed a small town police officer, you know, they were Barney Fife, or they weren't portrayed in, you know, the most positive light. And I wanted to talk to people and tell their stories about why was it extraordinary and how did it affect you as a person, not just what was the crime per se. So there's definitely talk about that, and And I go into character development of criminals, of, you know, who are these criminals and what are all the bad decisions they're making before 911 is ever called? Because there's a backstory every time a police officer is called to the scene of a crime or an issue. And so, you know, I tried to make that as a interesting character as part of the plot line, so you could kind of see who these guys are, and then how did it affect that police officer as a person? You know, how did it affect their family? And so, you know, some of the stories took place over the last couple of years, where we've had the defund the police movement, and, you know, things online, you know, that were police are being vilified. So I wanted to give them a voice, and that's what that book was all about.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You know, because I think everybody really needs to know, you know, those ins and outs of our police officers everywhere around the nation, and it's vitally important. And you know, by doing that book, did you run into some of these officers that experienced maybe working, you know, some cases that involve trafficking?
No, but one of the officers kind of inspired me to write this book. So,
okay.
I was interviewing one of the police officers, the first chapter, Jesse Cortez. I would ask, you know, I had a whole bunch of questions, and at the end I would just ask these random questions. And one of them was, what would you do if you won the lottery? And I was expecting, you know, hey, I'd go buy a cabin on the lake and go fishing every day. And what he said surprised me. He said, I would quit my job, I'd hunt down human traffickers. And it, you know, that thought stuck with me. And I said to myself, I need to come back to this after I'm done with this police book. And so that's what happened, because the more I thought about it, the more I realized that I, as an average citizen, really didn't have a lot of depth of knowledge of what was going on with human trafficking. And I figured if I only have a surface level of understanding, then probably most people also don't have a deep knowledge. And so this last year or so has been a big learning experience for me. And I feel like I've written the new book for that average person. They see an occasional headline. They don't really know that much. And they think it's only on the border or big cities. And that's why I focused on suburban and small town rural America, because that's where people say, think to themselves, oh, it doesn't happen in our nice neighborhood, or it doesn't happen at my kid's, you know, good school district, et cetera. And more research I did, you know, as you said earlier, it cuts across location, racial, socioeconomic, political spectrum. It can affect everybody, and it's not just something that you know, it's, you hear stories about third world countries and, you know, very poor people, you know, selling children, that type of thing. It's something that's right here in our own backyard, hiding in plain sight in our own neighborhoods. And when I talk to people about that, many are surprised to hear that. And so that's why I wanted to write these stories, to reveal these things, but tell it in a story that reads like a fast-paced fiction novel, so you're wanting to turn that page and find out what happens next. And at the end of the book, you realized, wow, I just learned a lot of stuff.
Right. You know, that's the thing that I think the awareness part comes in, you know, with this show, and also the way that you're writing your book, is to make sure that people are, you know, really comprehending on that level of what you're saying to them. And it's vitally important. And I tell you, that police officer that inspired you to write this book, man, let me tell you something. I would be glad, you know, to hug this guy, man, because let me tell you, I, in the same way, in the same sense, also kind of do that in my life. not only do I help, you know, here with NASCA, I've also been a co-founder of a worldwide organization and another worldwide organization I've been affiliated with for many years. And it's all about that. You know, it's all about that. It's all about, childhood sex abuse, trauma, everything that we are talking about tonight. Because these kids, man, are the future of our life, you know, and the future of the world when it comes down to helping, protect and prevent. And the awareness part, to me, is a major key, you know. So by you writing this book and making people really understand about what it's about, you know, about how to recognize, you know, these things and make them aware of the fact that, you know, it is happening in your town. You know, it's happening right around these areas where you are, you know, and it's a very evil business, man. You know, and what's sad about it, too, is that even these pandemics, John, is that they're using, you know, these times to do this, you know, to get our kids. And a lot of it, I'm sorry to say, you know, starts at the house in a lot of ways, you know, about the way that they grew up, you know, the environment with the parents that allows them to stray at a very young age, although that's not always the case, is it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, statistics will show that if someone is victim of childhood sexual abuse and even physical abuse, they're four times more likely to be re-traumatized in a human trafficking situation. So they're already in a vulnerable state. And what I wanted to do with this book was to, as you say, it starts with awareness. And mm-hmm. I wanted to write stories that reveal the evils of human trafficking without being salacious, graphic, or sensationalized. And so I really was very particular on, you know, how deep I got into descriptions, but it's fairly accurate as far as you know what's going on, but it isn't sensationalized or graphic. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the way that the modern society is with technology is we're seeing a convergence of, I would say, evil things. So like Dawn Hawkins, who is from the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, recently said, child sexual abuse, sex trafficking, and pornography have merged online into one industry. And when I heard that, it really like resonated, like, wow, yeah, it's all happening simultaneously. And as you mentioned, the pandemic, it's made many people depressed, feel isolated, and it's driven their online activity even more. And so those are all negative things. So the pandemic has made things worse. Technology allows predators to hide behind, you know, fake profiles, burner phones, all kinds of websites. And so you've got this sort of, you know, convergence of really bad things happening, which I think is making it worse for victims and causing more trauma.
Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes down to, you know, most victims of human trafficking, okay? And when we say human trafficking, you know, basically, let's just get down to it. It comes down to, you know, trafficked into the sex industry, basically, you know, and which involves prostitution, you know, there's all kind of things there. But, you know, most of the victims, from what I know of, are women and children, you know, and there are, you know, more rarely instances with young men too. Have you looked into some of those, and can you maybe, you know, clear the air on what kind of, you know, stats that you're seeing as far as that goes?
Yeah. It's really pretty horrifying. Over half of the victims are teenager age of sex mm-hmm. trafficking, and over half of those are exploited by someone that they know. That can be someone in their family. It can be a friend, someone in their high school, et cetera. So, mm-hmm. and one of the things that nobody talks about is the growing number of boys and young men that are also becoming victims. And that's one of the surprising things that that when I talk to people about it, they did not become aware of that stuff. A lot of people think mm-hmm. that these victims are kidnapped, and the stats on that is it's really just 3-5%, and they think that it's only poor kids. And while that definitely is a factor, there are a lot of suburban and small town kids that are mixed up in this, and
mm-hmm.
and so it's, you know, it really cuts across all these different demographics, and it's just really something that starts with awareness, and that can include education about what's happening, what are those signs, and then how do you protect your kids, or do you recognize it? It may not be your kid that's a victim, but it could be someone on their soccer team or someone mm-hmm. in their class. And it, you know, it could be that kid who doesn't talk a lot. And why is that? And there's a lot of factors that just increase your risk for many different bad things, but human trafficking is one of them.
Yeah. You know, I know that mass displacement is something that it comes along, you know, with trafficking, human trafficking. And, you know, what that involves is like conflict, extreme poverty, lack of access to education and job opportunities, violence, okay? Harmful social norms like child marriage, okay? Are all factors, you know, that push individuals into situations of trafficking, you know? And so do you discuss a lot about in your book about these things, about how, you know, these situations even come about in human trafficking?
Yes. So, I you know, I've got four chapters in the book, and each of them, there's a reason why I picked that particular person and wrote the stories. And I kind of feel like each chapter is kind of written for a particular type of person or a particular background. So, for example, the, mm-hmm. the first chapter is about Janelle Goodrich, who started a foundation and is an advocate. And what she does is she does case management for mostly underage victims, and helps them mm-hmm. navigate all the systems, because there could be criminal justice system, foster system, health, human services, education systems, as well as nonprofits. So she works with trying to, you know, kind of help that teen get the help that they need. And mm-hmm. I picked out two particular stories of what she was telling me about. One of them was somebody who was a victim through an online chat room. And that happens all the time. Every app that's out there, every game that's out there.
I want to talk a lot about this, because it's so important that we do. You know, so as much information as you can spread on this particular topic, please, you know, because let me tell you something. These kids are all over these screens, man. I have a daughter myself, man, that's 11, and I'm very concerned about it, you know, especially what I do for a living, too, you know, working in this industry. It scares me to death, you know, because I see what happens on the screens myself. But are they noticing, you know, that? Or you know, are really recognizing what it's going to become if they go too far with it. So please shed the light on this. I want to hear all you got to say about this.
Yeah, so I've got some practical tips as well as kind of some good background. So if you think about it, if you have a 15-year-old child, that child was born in 2007, which to, you know, old guys like me, that doesn't sound that long ago. But that 15-year-old has always existed, smartphones, the internet, Facebook, PayPal, et cetera. So they've grown up in an environment where those things have always been there. And what's different about, you know, when I grew up, there was stranger danger, where don't talk to strangers. You know, if you're playing in the park, there's a strange guy at the edge of the park, and he says, oh, can you help me find my puppy? Or, you know, I take you for a ride somewhere. That was the stranger danger that I grew up with. Today, that predator is trying to get to your kids, and your child could be sitting at the kitchen table on their phone in your house, which seems safe, and yet that's what's happening. So, you know, even though your child may not be looking for trouble, trouble is looking for them. And the world that we live in today, the great equalizer is Wi-Fi. It's the internet. Once you're online, doesn't matter where you are, how many people are in the room, how far you're away from, you know, dangerous parts of the city or the town or something like that, that's the great equalizer. And so what's happening is you're seeing most kids are online by kindergarten. Most kids are unsupervised online by the fourth or fifth grade. You know, the typical adolescent is spending 6 hours online, and the typical 17-year-old is spending 9 hours online. And so you've got a lot of time spent on there. And so there's just predators that are looking for these kids. So one very simple example is if a predator is trying to lure some unsuspecting teen, they may start out with something very simple like, hey, I'll give you $10 if you send me a picture of your feet. And the kid could get money through Zelle or Venmo or PayPal or et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the kid thinks, well, my feet? Yeah, well, I'll take $10. Sure, no problem. Well, you can imagine how that escalates to what they're going to pay for $25, for $100, and the next thing you know, the kid has gotten for their head, and so they just prey on, you know, people's desire to, you know, have that interaction with people, and a lot of times that's online.
You know,
and
I do want to say this while we're talking about that specific area about offering, you know, a way for them to earn money, is that that is one of the major causes of human trafficking is poverty. Okay. So I know poverty definitely is one of the largest, you know, contributors to human trafficking. Okay. So what they do is that they, like you said, you know, they target that, and then they offer them a way to earn money, okay, when in fact they will actually earn nothing in the long run because, you know, they're going to get treated as a slave, basically, you know. So it plays a large piece, you know, in many of the root causes of trafficking, you know, driving people to migrate, you know, making educational and legitimate work difficult to obtain, making recovery and safety from war and disaster impossible, you know. So that definitely is one of the main things, and I'm glad you really brought that up, because there's a lot of kids that when they see that thing about offering money, you know, for just a shot of their feet, you know, they're going to be like, okay, well, let's get back to the root of that, is that the kids these days, like you mentioned, they have access to the PayPals and you know, the Zelles and all these money, you know, cash apps, basically. And believe me, I definitely agree with that. So thank you so much for bringing that up. I think it's very important.
Yeah, there's really four factors that people will talk about as the unmet needs factors that increases vulnerability and risk. And the number one, as you said, is financial. The other ones are psychological, emotional, and material. And those can factor into all kinds of negative consequences. So that could involve sexting. It could involve blackmail, child pornography, sexual abuse, cyberbullying, depression, addiction, suicide. The bullseye is human trafficking, because it can lead to that. But even if it doesn't lead to trafficking, it can lead to these other things, which are obviously negative consequences as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is, it's almost like there's such a demand for cheap labor, but, you know, there's a huge demand for sex, you know. So when you get these two involved into the same area and becomes commercialized, you know, it's just an extensive, lucrative market. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's just one of the worst areas that I've experienced in my life to help deal with people, you know. And believe me, John, on this show, there are quite a few people that do come on and talk about this. However, and I'm going to say this with just a huge however, there are not enough people out in this world, not enough groups out here in this world to help protect our kids in this manner. So, you know, that's another big thank you, you know, for what you're doing, because you really are opening, you know, some eyes up about, you know, you writing your book and everything. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments. And as you said, it boils down to a lot of different things, and one of them is you have to be an involved parent. And in the old days, if you weren't involved, you'd stick your kid in front of the TV and put a movie on. And now, parents are handing their kid an iPad, and that just opens up the world to all kinds of problems. And so, as I said before, sometimes it may not be your kid looking for trouble, but trouble is looking for them. And every one of these apps has location services. They all have chat rooms. And their job as a software program is to drive more clicks and drive more people to their application. And so they're kind of luring them in. You know, one of the new things in the last decade is teens addicted to their devices and being online so much, and then really having depression, self-esteem issues if they're not getting enough likes or people aren't looking at whatever they've posted. And that's kind of a relatively new phenomenon.
Right. I know that Kim has been with us, and I know that she hasn't had an opportunity to, you know, maybe come into the show yet and talk a little bit about what we're talking about. So maybe I can bring her in just for a second, if you don't mind, and, you know, just say hi. And thank you so much for being here, Kim. How are you?
Hey, Don. Yeah, thank you for... Thanks.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Good to talk
Sorry.
With you.
Nice to meet you too. I am right now out like the opposite direction of you. So I've been in Littleton for about 30 years, and so I'm a little ways from you in Buena Vista.
Yep. A couple hours away.
Are you still? Yeah, 2 hours. Are you still doing accounting right now, or are you just fully focused on the trafficking?
So I don't work in that industry anymore. I'm fully engaged in writing and speaking engagements.
Okay. Awesome. That's great. Yeah,
I do want to say Kim's an author also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got some work. The main thing that I've been doing for the last few years is I teach classes through an organization called Darkness to Light, Stewards of Children. So I go out into the community and I teach classes on how to protect your children. So it's a 2-hour class. And that empowers me as a survivor just to be able to provide something, you know, to my communities and to the communities where my grandchildren are growing up in now, you know. I want to be able to just be a support for them and let them know that I'm here for them. So it's really exciting. And, so I like I said, friends on Facebook, you as well, and I look forward to getting to know you better. I'm just fascinated with all that you're doing. This is amazing. And I would look forward to reading your books, too. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
That's one thing that we do here.
I do have one more
John.
Question.
Yep. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Okay. I want to know, I guess, kind of how exactly things like the dark web get introduced to other people. Because I've heard, you know, you hear stories and cases of people who go on to the dark web, and how does a child get into that? I mean, do they actually, I guess that's my question. How do they actually get into that? Because it scares me to death.
So I think you're going to find places like child pornography, exchange sites on the dark web, and a lot of times what I've been told is that in order to get into some of these groups, you need to provide child pornography pictures, new pictures to the group. And one of the things I tell parents is don't, whatever you do, don't sell an old phone. Don't make sure your kid doesn't lose the phone, because even though they may not have any pictures that they knowingly have taken of themselves, there's lots of stories of people in group chats where someone is being bullied. There was just something in the, you know, in the news last month about at the end of school, 20 middle schoolers were in a group chat bullying a girl who had posted or gave somebody a picture of her topless. So now it went around to 20 different people. By definition, that's child pornography. That's already illegal for receiving, sending. And so, you know, a kid may not really even realize that they have some of these things. So having an old phone, you don't want to sell it, because that's where criminals will mine for pictures, is stolen and used phones. And so I think the research that in the interviews that I've had with people is that kids are not going to the dark web. The predators are going to these popular apps, whether they're TikTok, Snapchat, et cetera, and trying to get them into a private chat. And it may start very innocent. Hey, what kind of music do you like? What kind of food do you like? And it's so easy to set up a fake profile that they look like another 10-year-old, 12-year-old, whoever they're targeting. And they're using just these popular software programs and gaming to target the kids. So That's kind of what I'm seeing.
Wow. And that's something that I hadn't thought about a whole lot is selling the phone. So, I mean, but you're talking about like on Facebook or wherever they go out and they sell stuff, not to sell them on there. Now, but if you return it to the factory, that's different, right? Because it gets cleared and everything. I just don't know much about.
Yeah, so imagine one of those 20 middle schoolers lost their phone. Now they have this girl's picture, who knows what else, sitting on their phone. And maybe they didn't even ask for this picture. They could be totally innocent, or they could be the one bullying. You know, it could be anything. Imagine if that middle schooler lost their phone. And we all know kids lose phones all the time. And criminals are savvy to this kind of situation. So people get phones stolen. You can try to hack in, and criminals know that there are certain programs that have secret hidden photo folders, and you know that they hide from their parents or anybody else. You know, one of them looks like a calculator program. It actually functions like a calculator, but there's a secret passage that goes into a whole folder of secret pictures. And a lot of parents don't know about that. Criminals know all about that.
Wow. Grandson, who'll be 11 in a couple months, just got a phone. He is my bonus grandson, so he has, you know, a whole other side of the family that that he goes to. So he goes back and forth to his dad and his mom. And I'd never even thought about that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Snapchat is one of the most popular program for teens. And there's a hidden folder called My Eyes Only. And it's exactly what you know, it's a secret vault of pictures. And so even if you're a parent and you go on your kid's phone and you look at Snapchat and what they're doing, and it could look all okay, but you know about this hidden vault. You know, there's things like that. There's what's called fake GPS location spoofers. So I did a quick search on the Google store, and there's a fake spoofer program that's been downloaded more than 10 million times. And what it does is it alters your location capabilities on your phone. So if the parent has a Find My Friend or something like that that says, well, where is my child? And it looks like they're at a friend's house, they're at McDonald's, they're at the library. Well, in fact, there's somewhere else. And so parents don't know about these fake spoofer programs. And so, you know, all these things kind of come into play. My daughter is a school resource officer, so she's in the police, you know, she's with the police department and is in the town's middle school and high school. And we were talking about this, and she said, yeah, you know, just go to YouTube and type in to be sneaky with your parents. And I found three videos within 5 seconds that are titled How to Hide Weed, How to Not Get Caught Smoking by Strict Parents, and How to Be Sneaky with Their Strict Parents. All of those videos have almost 1 million views. So if it took me, who's not that savvy, 5 seconds to find this, somebody who wants to know those things can easily go out, you know, use YouTube on how to fix something. It tells me, you know, for how to fix something around the house. You know, that's not what some people are using it for.
Wow. Well, and all I had to worry about, my youngest is 23. My oldest is 35. So my youngest, I remember, the most I had to worry about is he figured out how to hack into the school's system so that they couldn't call me. They'd call him. He changed the phone numbers. So, you know, it's scary these days.
Yeah.
To just hear about all of the things that you don't realize are out there. And as Karen, you know, I'm a grandparent, so I don't have the authority to necessarily do this, but I can pass this information along and hope that my kids take this information and use it, you know. So thank you.
Yeah, and there are programs that parents can buy, such as NetNanny, Canopy, Bark, which can alert parents to, you know, what sites are they visiting. And some of these programs are even pretty smart now, where they will look at the chats and texts and private messages, and they'll send the parent an alert that says, hey, based upon what was typed in, it sounds like this might be a bullying situation or a sexting situation. And so there's definitely things out there that can help the parent. But, you know, if somebody wants to circumvent a program, they can certainly do that. And so, you know, part of it is talking to the teens and telling them that this is a real situation that can really get them in trouble.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you.
Sure. You know, because one of the things that's happening is, if you look at the statistics, the suburban high school girls is the fastest growing demographic for being a victim online. And so if you think of that, that's kind of your normal middle class kid, and they're the ones that they're, you know, falling prey to this, the fastest growing group. You know, because, I mean, being a teenager is hard enough, but they're, you know, these predators are counting on the desire to be accepted, the desire to have as many friends as possible, you know, or followers, depending upon the program. And one of the things that I talk to parents about is, how many friends does your child have? And I was talking to an officer who does undercover work, and he was saying that many popular teens will have thousands of friends. And most of those, of course, they don't actually know in person. It's a big problem. So I can give you an example. So this officer, he had created a fake profile of a good-looking teenage boy. And so he sent this friend request to the 20 most popular kids in the school. And the school had several hundred people. And within an hour, 90% of those top 20 popular kids had accepted his friend's request. And once you get the popular kids as your friend, by the end of the week, he had almost 500 students following him and his profile. And he did this a week or two before he was going to give a safety talk to the students. And so he told the students exactly what he did. And some were surprised, some were horrified, some, you know, couldn't believe it. So then he said to the student body, well, who am I? Which one of your friends, who is this fake profile? Nobody could figure it out, because most of them had thousands of friends, and they really had no idea who it was. So if someone could set up a fake profile and get hundreds and hundreds of friends within a week, now how hard is it for a predator who's doing this, you know, multiple times in multiple schools?
Right.
Wow. That's an eye-opener. Yeah. That's huge.
It's scary. It really is scary, Kim, you know, to think. Because we all, most of us here have children, and we're always concerned and grandchildren about, you know, where are they? What are they doing? About the, you know, the access to having this platform. It's unlimited, really, in their hands every single day, which now is on cell phones. You know, they have everything on it. And, you know, when you come down to these traffickers, you know, tapping into a group, when, you know, your child, your grandchild is in that group, it hits home. You know, it really makes you wonder, you know, about the safety of all the kids, you know, as we look at it on a grand scale, not just who's around you every day, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's serious stuff.
Well, and if you think that you're lucky because you have sons instead of daughters, you can think again, because I've also talked to police officers, and one of the tactics that's used against boys is there'll be this fake profile of an older girl, say college age. They will send a friend request to a teenage boy, high schooler, and it very quickly goes into, I'll show you if you show me. And she, I use that kind of with air quotes because who knows who's really behind the fake profile, they'll send a downloaded, you know, nude picture that they got from a pornography site or something like that. So the high school boy now thinks that, oh, I've got this, you know, wild girl on the other end, and he's sending me nude pics. And now she's asked, well, now it's your turn. I sent you mine, you send me yours. And so he sends her real pics of himself. Immediately, she's asking for money and is trying to extort them. I have your contact. I know who all your friends are. I'm going to send this nude picture of you if you don't send me X dollars. And then the high schooler will typically freak out and not know what to do. And hopefully they're going to talk to a parent. They're going to talk to their school resource officer, somebody who can help them out, because, you know, as soon as you pay $100, asking for $200 next time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and it's good to have these conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, and those are real stories that unfortunately, I've heard that from more than one police officer in more than one location. So it's not just something that happens in, you know, small towns or big towns. You know, again, Wi-Fi and the internet is a great equalizer. You can get in just as much trouble in, you know, a great high school, private high school, as you can in, you know, the bad part of town, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. You know, which brings up, you know, some other issues regarding, you know, social factors and cultural, you know, practices. You know, even in your bio, you had mentioned, you know, a lot about that, you know, as far as, you know, the different cultures being, you know, involved with human trafficking. So, you know, what do you see as far as that goes? In other words, do you see a higher amount of children or, you know, upper age teens and even, you know, adults to that matter at the age of 17, 18, 19, 20, from different cultures that are being affected by human trafficking more than others?
I'm seeing it in all kinds of different people. And so, you know, some of the studies will show that some minority groups can be more susceptible than others, and there's debate as far as why that is. But I kind of really looked at the bigger picture as far as what are the modern culture that are contributing to this problem and making things worse. And I would really kind of point, we talked to some of about some of them, but I would kind of point to two things. One is pornography, which is readily accessible, and the age when people are viewing that is becoming younger and younger, and it's warping that view of relationship. It's warping what's normal, you know, sex in a context of love and marriage. That's completely disfigured. When you, especially as a young person viewing pornography. And the other piece is kind of the modern culture as far as the sexualization of our children. I remember when my daughters were young and they were 10 or 12 years old, it's even harder now to go to a store and find age-appropriate clothing. And the most overused headline of our time is celebrity wears revealing outfit. And that's every day. Mm-hmm. There's at least one headline about somebody, almost always female, showing, you know, oh, so-and-so showed a topless photo or something like that. And so what is that telling young girls? It's telling them this is what's important. This is how you get attention. This is how you're valued. What is that telling young boys? It's telling them the same thing, and it's saying, well, this is how you treat women and girls. And to me, that's the real war on women, is how we're sexualizing kids at a younger and younger age. And so it gets to a trafficking situation. A sex buyer doesn't care because they've been programmed to think that's, you know, so this other person is good for, and it allows the society to kind of look the other way, and which is completely wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, that, yeah, really. I mean, that is the root, you know, of it all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as we talked about the pandemic, you know, there's more, especially young people with depression, mental health issues, and whenever you're feeling isolated, you're more easily manipulated, and it may not be human trafficking. As I said before, it could be bullying, it could be extortion, child pornography. But human trafficking is kind of the bullseye, and that's kind of how I refer to it.
And the bullying part too is that, you know, we get a lot of people here on the show, John, that are or have been either in fact, some of them have bullied, and some have been bullied. So, you know, we get both sides of it here, and so the ones that did the bullying, and they talk about it these days, you know, were, you know, as kids kind of thing. And that's usually when you see this, and it scares me to know. And the reason why I'm getting at this, because earlier, I know you brought up the situation about, you said, you know, your daughter, she was, you know, she still is in law enforcement. She, you know, does this at the schools, and she has to see this, you know? So I want to commend her, first of all, on a national scale of the job that she's doing out there, which is, to me, one of the most important jobs that there are on this planet. You know, it is for some type of, you know, law enforcement agent to be there, you know, to make sure that these things, because, you know, the education behind it is the key. And then, you know, on top of that, when you get into, say, you know, pandemics and natural disasters and stuff like that, which are happening right now, from COVID and also the war over there, you know, a lot of people are leaving, you know, their countries, right, in their hometowns. So that's making them more vulnerable traffickers, you know, and especially, you know, if they're looking for work, you know, or anything like that, where they would pay smugglers, okay, to get where they want to go. So basically, you know, that with an increased economic instability, basically traffickers have opportunities which are endless, you know. And that goes for your hometown, my hometown, you know, every single community that we live around. So I think it's so important, you know, that we educate the public on this, you know. And I do want to reemphasize about, you know, your first book. I saw that on Amazon it gave you a 5-star rating, you know. And I can only expect if there's even anything higher than that on this book, you know, because both of them in a way can go hand in hand if you look at the whole picture, you know. And to know that not only are, you know, our law enforcement people out here doing the very best that they can possibly do at this given day and age of stopping trafficking and childhood sex abuse, you know, it's the fact that the education behind it is going to only increase the awareness of the whole situation and how they tie in, you know. So I'm sure that your daughter's got a lot, you know, that she would have an input on what you're doing and everything else. So I'm sure she's very proud, you know, of you know, what you've accomplished and also what you're accomplishing, you know. And also I want to, you know, talk about this is that in the, I think it was what I read, the last chapter in your book, it kind of, you know, and enforced more on the education of the parents, right?
Yes.
And about the awareness? Uh-huh. Okay. So can you maybe shine a light on that and create awareness to, you know, some of these parents even more than what we've already talked about in our hometowns? I mean, how can parents really recognize their own kids that might be involved with something that's not right?
Sure. So, you know, some of the signs for grooming, because a lot of these pimps and predators, they're what's called Romeo pimps, which means that, as the name implies, they are trying to charm their way with the person. They are trying to build a relationship. And so if you see signs, and again, it could be your kids, could be your kids' friends, that someone has unexplained gifts, especially if there's a second cell phone, that's definitely a red flag. If they've got an older boyfriend or somebody is secretive about new friends, new boyfriends, et cetera, definitely that's something that you're going to want to pay attention to. If there's, you know, a sudden change in dress or behavior or attitude, especially attitude about sex, if they say something like, well, it's no big deal, everyone's doing it, you know, that type of thing, and that's, especially if that's new attitude, that's something you're going to want to pay attention to.
So basically,
we haven't really talked a lot about...
So basically when you're saying that if you have a conversation with your child on sex itself, right, and you see that there's a conflict on how they react to that, like in other words, they're going to be very negative and really hash out on that particular topic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every parent has their own version of the talk about the birds and the bees, and it's especially if there's sort of quick changes that have occurred. It could be attitude about sex. It could be dropping grades. And one of the things we haven't talked that much about is any kind of teen using drugs or alcohol. That's going to cause all kinds of problems, and one of them could be trafficking. One of the storylines was where a predator was grooming a teen and then eventually gets her addicted to drugs, and so they're going to be a lot more easier to manipulate if there's an addiction in place as well.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, John. Is that, you know, drugs and alcohol are, I think, one of the major factors on, you know, tapping into our kids. And again, you know, I want to reemphasize the fact about the parents, you know, is that when there are situations happening at home that can affect that child in such ways where, like you said, grades dropping, sleeping situations could come in, changes in their eating habits too, you know. The way that they, you know, normally operate, that as you knew your child, and then literally all of a sudden, you know, before you even realized that things have taken a 360, you know. So, yes, you know, these signs, and I do like what you said about, you know, having access to another phone, because what could happen with that other phone? They could hide that thing from you, you know, when I say you, parents, okay, and you would never know it, you know. So I think that parents really, you know, need to be a part of their lives. I mean, don't you agree in that sense?
Definitely. You have to be an involved parent, and it's not just once and say, how's it going, or let's have, you know, let's talk about this particular subject, but kids are readily influenced by their friends. So knowing who their friends are, and so there's an old saying that you become what your friends are like, and that's a question to asking your teen. Is this friend helping you become a better version of yourself, or are they dragging you in a negative direction? Or, you know, a bad way? And if you ask, you know, your child, who are your top three or four friends, and if whoever they've mentioned, someone they only know online, that's another red flag to the parent. And, you know, one of the questions that I always tell parents they should ask is, do you know my phone number by heart? When I was growing up, I knew a lot of phone numbers. Now, it's all on your contact list or your database, or, you know, it used to be on speed dial. Now, teens don't know anyone's phone number. So not only would that be helpful if their phone runs out of battery, but if they're in real trouble. And I specifically added that to one of the storylines, is that a teen an opportunity to make a phone call, remember the number to call.
And you know, we're talking about parents being involved. If a parent, you know, thought or suspected, you know, that their child was being trafficked by anything, you know, it could be anything that way, what would you recommend that parent to do?
Sure. You've got to tell your teen that you've got their back, and you're going to be with them the entire time, and you can get help from law enforcement or school principal or something like that. And that, you know, as bad as it seems, it's not the end of the world, in the sense of if you've been exploited by, say, extortion or something like that, you can get help. This is not how your life needs to be. And they need to know, ultimately, they need to know that somebody cares and somebody is going to help them through the whatever situation they find themselves in. And
right.
So thing you want to say is, I'm that person that cares. I'm here for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of teens and parents have difficult relationships, and that's when you have to come back and say, you know, my child, I love you, and I'm going to help you, and we're going to get through this together, and I'm going to keep you safe from now on.
Mm-hmm. You know, while we're speaking about that, just in case anything does ever happen, you know, there are a lot of resources out here that, you know, people, when I say people, parents can go to if, you know, if something does ever happen to their child, you know. So we have one that's Missing Children hotline. It's 1-800-4-A-CHILD. And also Safe Kids Now and 1-800-THE-LOST, okay? So these are phone numbers that you know, parents can call. And if you ever need these phone numbers, we have them here at NASCA. So, you know, there's a huge platform here available, and this is just another way that NASCA does, you know, come in and help people, you know, spread the word, spread the awareness, and make you realize, you know, about what's really happening in your own neighborhoods today. And I know we have a little bit less than 15 minutes left. Maybe I can bring Kim back in, you know, for a few minutes and you know, just see what she has to say. Kim?
Yeah. I don't really have a whole lot more to say. I just feel like this was very, very informative. And I appreciate your coming on to the show and providing us with this information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
really
awesome,
glad to be
thank
here.
You.
Well, and kind of as you were touching on, you know, at the end, whether it's a trafficker or somebody who is an abuser in the home, they're counting on that other person to feel embarrassed, to feel shame, and be silent, right? And that's where they need to know that they have these other resources you mentioned, as well as, you know, a trusted adult that that's going to be in their corner, because they're counting on a person staying silent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I see also, John. You know, they are counting on that. And hopefully, you know, by making awareness and you know, spreading the word, that won't happen. You know, that's one of the major things, I think, in this world of fighting against all types of abuse, you know, human trafficking, sex abuse. You know, there's also domestic, you know, there's trauma related of all sorts, mental, you know, physical, emotional, and spiritual. You know, there's so much involved with it, you know, that it never really ends, man. So, you know, with that being said, is that when parents, you know, see a situation happening, don't you think that not only should they be aware of their own household, but also, you know, help out in the community? So, you know, how are some ways that maybe, you know, some other parents can benefit the community of you know, just educating other friends, which would be other parents, right? Because a lot of times, you know, your kids are hanging around, like you said earlier, and they know each other's number. However, if they lose that phone, then, you know, what now? You know, I mean, that's a lot there. But if parents work together by, you know, talking about situations, about noticing situations, about saying, hey, you know, this came up over at so-and-so school, or this was on the news today, you know, just things of that nature. Don't you agree that the communication should be talked about more these days instead of not being so silent? And that's about really getting rid of that taboo of discussing, you know, any abuse, you know, whatsoever. And you know that human trafficking is major when it comes to this. It covers really every area of what we do here at NASCA. So don't you think that you know, there should be more of parents, you know, talking about these situations among themselves instead of waiting too late?
Absolutely. You know, it starts with awareness even before you get to awareness, you have to be willing to hear about the issue and not think to yourself, oh, I live in a nice gated community, or my kid goes to a nice school, they have nice teachers, and it can't happen here, when it can. After you have that awareness, then you can get involved and put your time, talent, and treasure into these right places. I mean, there's lots of nonprofits that would love to have help, whether that's domestic violence, whether that's human trafficking, childhood sex abuse, and they don't need money. They don't just need money, I should say. They also need people's time, because survivors, they may need life skills, or they may now be an adult. They may need parenting skills. If you've been in a bad situation, just having somebody to help with household budgeting, job training, how to write a resume, spiritual nourishment, all those things can be more than just, writing a check to a nonprofit. Is try to get involved so you can work with people, and ultimately then you become that person who cares. And that's what all these survivors and all these people that have had traumatic experiences, that's what they need. They need someone to care. And a lot of times they feel like nobody cares, society doesn't care. And,
you know what upsets me while you're sort of left out, John, is that sometimes even the parents do reach out to certain law enforcement, people, and those law enforcement people, write a report, and it never goes anywhere after that. It's like it never got investigated. It never went any further. Months went by without any contact. So I'm hoping, by, what we've been doing here for years is to change that, is to make sure that these people can make that phone call and, know that someone does care. Someone does have empathy on the other side of that line, and that they can, hopefully have a resource, to check on the situation and help, because I think it's vitally important that the way that things are going these days is that we're trying to change everything that's happened in the past. We're trying to change laws on any type of what I would call limitations, statute of limitations on any type of abuse, right? Well, holding these people accountable, number one, but also to know that if they were a part or were trafficked through a certain group or an organization, that now they have more rights than ever, So I do this religiously. I always fight for any type of rights when it comes to this. So I'm hoping, that, by us getting together tonight and you writing your books, that, these people, a little bit at a time, we're not going to change everything in one day. However, there's been a lot of changes happen, especially over the past 5 years, man. Since 2017, I've been a part of so much movement that the world, I can see it changing before my eyes. However, there's still a lot to do, and awareness is the key, and we have a battle in front of us. So I know that, that by us getting together in discussing these on this radio show, is that, we have a scan. We have a number that you can go to, and I publish these shows, John. So what I'm going to do, since I'm a producer here for NASCA, is that I'll make sure that this gets on every platform that's available that I have and aware of, so people can listen to this show, And you can also listen to the show, and you can forward it, and you can send it, and you can do this and whatever you want to. That's what we're about, So I do want to thank you so much. And, I know we have about 5 minutes left, maybe a little bit less than that. But I do want to tell everyone about your book again, and it's called It's Not About the Sex, okay? So it basically features, you know, true stories, okay? True stories of human trafficking. So ordinary citizens will become aware of about it and how this problem occurs on the radar of your own society, okay, which is so important. And I think that's the way things need to be done. It really does, because anybody could write a book on anything. But when you tap in to a certain area of true stories, you know, in touching ordinary citizens, this is what we need, because this is where it is coming from. It's the root cause. It's the root area, you know. So, you know, when this last, you know, 4 minutes that we have or so, John, you know, I want you just, you know, to tell us anything and everything about your book, how they can get in touch with you, and also to give us, you know, a little more information on, you know, what you're about.
Sure. So the book is selling on Amazon. You can also get a signed copy from my website, which is www.itisnotabout.com. And I wanted to touch on one of the things you had said, which was about the survivor aspect. And one of the stories in my book is about Angela Clark, who her story in a lot of ways is not a sad story. It's an inspirational story, because here's this person who has spent decades healing, covering, persevering in the face of adversity, and it answers the question of how do you survive all of what she went through and have the wherewithal to tell me, a total stranger, her story. And so she goes through trying to remedy herself, whether it's therapy, comes to the conclusion that there isn't a pill that can heal the broken heart. She ends with that she's so much more than a victim, and she realizes that you cannot rewrite your history. Your real power begins when you can choose to work through the past. And I think anybody who's had any kind of trauma will really find that story inspirational, because she's done it and she struggles every day. It's not a 100%, and I don't think any survivor is going to tell you that they're 100% back before
healed.
They were mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think that's, you know, that's the kind of the thing I want people to, you know, to read about, is they're not just all bad stories in the sense of talking about trafficking, which is a heavy and difficult subject, but there is, you know, that perseverance in the face of adversity, and how does somebody do that? And I think that's where people are going to really feel like they can connect with people that I've interviewed and profiled in this book. Is I really wanted reader to get to know whatever chapter person that they're they're reading about, and I think that they'll find that these people are very relatable. And you know, one of the things Angela always said is, I wanted to be healed enough so when I walk into a room, the people are not saying, oh, the survivor's here. She wanted to walk into the room and have people say, gee, has the survivor showed up yet? And I think that's the goal of a lot of people. And I really felt inspiration in talking with her. And she now, you know, she does speaking engagements and she tells her story all over the place. And it's just amazing that somebody can draw that strength after going through what she went through. And that's what's so impressive. And some of the best advocates in this movement are the survivors themselves.
Yeah, that's so important that you say that. And I really want to thank you so much, John, for being here tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, this is John DiGirolamo. He's from Buena Vista, Colorado. Please look up his new book. It's Not About the Sex is the name of it. And he gave the website, I think it's www.itsnotaboutthesex. Is that correct?
It's notabout.com. And you can get both books.
It's notabout.com. Okay. All right. I got you. So thank you all so much for being here tonight. And this was scan number 2971. Everyone, please have a good night. If you see something, please say something. Thank you, John. Thank you, Kim.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much.